Welcome to the Humane Roundup podcast, where we share all the exciting stories about animal cruelty investigations, dangerous animals, and amazing rescues. Find out what goes on inside of animal shelters and all the current trends in the animal welfare industry. Now, here is your host, Daniel Ettinger.
And his co-host, Ashley Bishop. Shout out to our editor, Tim, making all this stuff sound great. And can't forget our executive producer, Hildy, for making sure we get some great guests. If you missed episode 83, you've got to go back and check that
go
out.
Go back.
Carol Baskins.
All you we cool cats and kittens.
Carol Baskin was our host, or our guest that week, and it's a great episode. And welcome to episode 84.
Woo! We're
check
getting through
out.
It.
Yeah, check us out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, whatever, Google Podcasts, whatever it's called. Leave us like reviews, whatever that stuff is. And be sure to check us out on social media, H.O. Bishop, Humane Officer Bishop on Instagram and Facebook. And then I'm Animal Protection Officer Daniel on both as well. Today, we have a great show lined up. We have a great show lined up.
Like,
we do.
I'm going to be selfish and say it.
We have the creator. We have the creator of our logo that's going to join us in a second. And then we have a friend of mine, Mark Kumpf, who I've known for several years, who's the director of animal care and control for the great
city. Sorry, Mark, you've been stuck with him.
Of Detroit. So let's, Shelby, let's introduce you really quick. It's Shelby Sandlin, who is the creative mind behind our logo. Thanks for joining us today, Shelby.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
We're so excited to have you. And we just want our listeners to know that we just want them to know where this logo came from, but also to know that you're a fellow officer and give them some background, what you do there.
So I have been an officer for almost 2 years now out of a little county in Indiana. Small old Harrison County, not much there, blink and you miss it. We actually don't deal with a whole lot of what you see of the big city officers deal with. It's more of just your at-large dogs being out here in the country, you know, a bite case here or there. And more, we deal more with livestock, I think, more than anything, being, you know, farmland.
Any tigers?
No tigers. Definitely Woo! No tigers. But I've got a
Yet.
Couple cats that would like to think they're tigers.
Yet, but you never know, right?
Syndrome? Can you have little cat syndrome?
Yeah, I would love to get that call for a tiger, though. That would be amazing.
So, you've been doing design work all your life. Like, how did you come up with the logo? First off, thank you for being willing to do that and your patience on getting you on the program. I know we changed that logo in January, and you've been on my mind to really just get you here. And thank you for all that work with that. So, how did you come? Yeah, how long have you been doing graphic design stuff?
So, I started graphic work. Well, I've always been very creative and drawing and art my whole life. But I started doing actual graphic work in 2015, right out of high school. And did the t-shirts, the vinyl stuff, decals, and just got into it that way. And it's just always been a passion. My favorite thing in the world is designing logos. So, with the URL's logo, the silhouette of the, you know, the officer and the dog kind of just really represents you, whatever, you know, what we do. The dog is actually based after one of my previous canines that has passed away. I thank you for giving me that creative flexibility there to kind of make it mean a little more to me.
Sure.
Absolutely. It took probably...
It's hard. It's... Sometimes when we think of our old animals, sometimes we get a little choked up. So I totally get it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It means a lot.
He was the class clown. He was more of a therapy dog for us because he went to work with me every day. So we got to go to the schools and do demos, and he was just a big goofball. Everybody loved him. So it definitely kind of, you know, he was our ACO canine dog. All he was for was to make everybody happy, and man, he did his job great. I think that logo, it took me maybe 8 hours, I'm going to say, before I had it to where I was super happy with it.
Well, that's an impressive time.
That's a lot of time. We appreciate you doing that.
Yeah, I was just, I racked my brain on what I wanted to do and what we talked about, and I think it turned out really well. I really do.
And you talked about there's like a friends of your department that we can make donations to, or is it a rescue you worked with? Help me remember that.
I can't hardly remember either. I do know for like money and donations and that kind of thing, we usually send them over to the Heart Humane Society in Indiana. They're kind of our best friends. You know, they kind of help us out in that manner. But for like stuff donations that you can get off like Chewy, we could definitely be donated to the facility. We're in the middle of kitten season, so like canned food and all that is always premium demand.
What's the name of the facility for our listeners?
It's Harrison County Animal Control. We do have a Facebook page, but it goes by Harrison County Animal Control, Cordon, Indiana, because apparently there is another Harrison County Animal Control in like Mississippi and West Virginia. Oh. We get calls from them all the time.
You're like, yeah, it's going to be a 23-hour drive, so right. Can you just not bring it to us?
Yeah, we'll get calls about, if you all are never going to come do something about this dog, and we'll be like, well, where are you at? We didn't hear about it. And they'll tell us, and we're like, no, that's not us.
We're not actually going to come do something about that dog.
Right. I'm like, well, I'm sorry. I guess you're going to have to wait a little longer.
Well, Shelby, seriously, thank you from the Humane Roundup. Thank you for working with us on that logo.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure. It really was.
We really appreciate it. And, you know, you're always going to have a place here on the podcast if you ever want to come on and talk about anything case related or you need assistance from the community, please let us know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Cool. Awesome.
Oh, well, absolutely. Thank you so much.
You bet. And enjoy the rest of your day, and hopefully we can talk soon.
All righty. Sounds good.
Thanks.
Have a good day, Shelby.
Awesome stuff. Awesome stuff, man. I'm so grateful for that logo, and glad that we're able to get her on here to talk about it so people know where it came from. So.
That's awesome too, that she got to incorporate, you know, one of her dogs and stuff. It makes it more personal, and that's really cool.
It is indeed. All right. Well, let's introduce our next guest. I think it's important that we keep it moving today. And I know, you know, like I mentioned, I've known Mark Kump for at least 7 years now, something like that, yeah. Maybe even longer. And Mark is the Director of Animal Care and Control for the City of Detroit, Michigan. Mark, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for your patience, too. I know, you know, we've tried to get you on, and you know, schedule-wise, we appreciate you taking time out today to get on and chat with us.
Hey, no worries. Things have been busy in Detroit for the past year and a half.
I could imagine. Let's talk a little bit about, so our listeners, I know you, but I want some of our listeners to know like kind of your background and expertise. I mean, you're not just the Director of Animal Care and Control. You've basically given presentations all over the country, and you've been involved with a lot of different things. So do you mind just taking a second to kind of introduce yourself and let our listeners know who you are and what you do?
Well, sure, Dan. And I think it's kind of a cool note that this is episode 84. When I started back in animal protection in the city of Detroit, the city of Norfolk. Yes, it's been a while. My unit number was 484.
Nice.
And that's been over 33 years ago. So I've had a long journey through animal welfare. I started out with the city of Norfolk Police Department with their animal protection unit back in 1989. Graduated from being a humane officer on the street to being the senior humane officer and the supervisor. I helped design and open the city of Norfolk's Animal Management Center, now Norfolk Animal Care, in 1996. In 2004, I left the city of Norfolk to join the city of Newport News Department of Parks, Recreation, and Tourism as the superintendent for their newly established animal control office, and was a plank holder for Newport News Animal Services. In 2006, I left the city of Newport News to transition as the director of the Montgomery County Animal Resource Center in Dayton, Ohio, And I was there from 2006 till 2018. And in 2019, I joined the city of Detroit as the director of animal care and control for their department, where I oversee the animal shelter and animal shelter operation. As Dan mentioned, I've taught all over the country as well as overseas. I've spoken in England and Australia, traveled to New Zealand, and pretty much spoke at every conference or association that I've had an opportunity to get in front of folks. Coming up this year, I'll be the keynote speaker for the Badger State Conference, speaking for the Missouri Animal Control folks in October. And
see you there, buddy.
Looking forward to it. Going to be there with you and I believe Kevin Hurst. So the
the three best friends that anybody can have.
that sounds like a recipe for trouble.
It's the three stooges of animal control. I'm not sure which one of us is who, but if I can be Curly, I think I'll be happy.
That'll be a great time, man. And you just left Newport News right before the Michael Vick case broke, right?
Yeah, I just left beforehand, and it was kind of interesting because, Newport News, Bad News Kennels, that was Michael Vick's stomping ground. And we used to run across his dogs in the animal shelter, and, there would be people that come in and say, oh, this is Michael's dog. And we said, well, that's great. Have him come in and claim it. Mm-hmm. Surprisingly, he never did. Mm-hmm. But I served as the federal expert witness for that case and was involved. From afar, because they contacted me in Ohio as soon as it happened, consulted with the AUSA's office, and during the prosecution, made some recommendations in that. And I had the joy of being targeted for being hit. Several folks unhappy with me being involved with the case. I actually had police protection for a while and had to vary my routine because folks threatened to run me off the road and shoot me in my car to keep me from testifying.
So two guests in a row now, Carol Baskin last week had a hit put on her, and Mark Kumpf this week had a hit put on her. This is a dangerous profession, people. I'm not trying to be joking around about this. Like, that's some serious shit when you literally have to, watch your back at every move and change the way that you live because of that.
Yeah, and unfortunately, as a police chief once told me, he says, the two people that upset people the most are animal control and the parking ticket office. Hmm. And we seem to be able, we may not be able to make everybody happy, but we universally can tick everybody off.
The damn truth.
Yeah.
So that's kind of me in a nutshell. I spend my spare time teaching, developing classes and courses, spoke with Dan at a couple of places. We've team taught together. And really my kind of passion is improving the profession. I think training and education is key to how we survive. And I make it my mission to make sure that people go home with no more holes in their body than they started out with at the beginning of the day.
I like the way you put that, because that's a lot of different meanings there.
Cat absolutely.
Scratches, dog bites, gunshots, stabs.
Correct.
So can we talk a little bit about Detroit? And just, I think as our listeners know, Detroit just is synonymous with being this dangerous city. There's, if you know anything about the city of Detroit, there's a lot of vacant homes. And I would imagine that, like, here in our city, we don't have a stray dog issue, but I would imagine in Detroit you somewhat have packs of feral dogs. And maybe I'm wrong about this, but just talk to us a little bit about, like, what you see on a day-to-day basis for call wise. Are there feral dogs like there would be feral cat colonies? And how do you keep safe? How do you keep your officers safe in a community that has this historical image of being such a dangerous city?
Well, you kind of have to use the Wayback Machine. And Detroit Animal Control has bounced through a number of supervisors, different directors. It was under the health department. It was under the police department. It's just had a long tradition of trying to find a fit that didn't really happen. It's been underfunded and understaffed. And if you go back 5, 10 years, you had those types of situations that you're describing. But since I started back in September of 2019, the city really has changed its focus and committed to funding animal control, doubling the staff. If and when we ever can hire enough folks to fill all the vacancies, we'll have over 75 full-time employees with the department, over 35 in the field side and 35 in the shelter side. Folks kind of say, oh, there's packs of dogs running around Detroit. And I've read the articles, and I drive around the city every day I work, trying to find one. And unlike other jurisdictions that I've worked in, I have yet to personally, in a year and a half, and this is spending time on the road 4 or 5 days a week looking, I have yet to personally see a stray dog in my city. Stray cats, you betcha.
What? But
no.
How big is, by population, is Detroit?
We have about 670,000 people for the city of Detroit.
Isn't that roughly what you're at, Dan?
Yeah, 700.
And you guys have what, 17?
15. How many officers did you say you had, Mark?
When we're up to full staff, we'll have 23 animal control officers, 7 investigators, 3 animal control supervisors, an animal control manager, and an assistant director of animal control.
Be jealous.
Wait.
Be jealous, Dan.
Hold up. Let me make sure I hear this right. So 23 officers plus 7 investigators?
23 officers, 7 investigators, 3 supervisors, 1 manager, 1 assistant director.
Damn.
Jealous.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, well, that's, you know, now, let me be real, though, about it really quick, though. Is that some of your making because you were able to articulate that this department needs this?
Yeah, when I came on, we were in the process of trying to determine how and what would be the vision for this, the shelter and the operation moving forward. And when we talked about staffing, you know, a lot of that was focused on, they'd had one investigator to deal with dog bites for years. Well, you know, that's kind of an issue. And with 2 human-related fatalities, they committed to having an investigator for each council district. So there's 1 per council person's district. We have 7 districts. And having enough officers to run a 7-day operation. You know, before, they were pretty much Monday through Friday, limited hours even those days, no weekends, no evenings. So recommended that we increase the staff. You know, recommended what types of vehicles they needed to transition to. You know, someone had the idea that they were going to put the investigators in Chevy Impalas, and pointed out that, yeah, probably not the best way to run that style of operation. You know, if you're going to do something, at least put them in a, you know, good sized SUV that you can throw a temporary kennel in the back, carry equipment, and, you know, actually do investigations. But, you know, the budget recommendations and the people were based on actually having enough folks to do it. I mean, when we talk about the animal care side of the operation, that's 20 animal care technicians, 6 animal shelter assistants, 2 registered vet techs, 2.5 veterinarians, an outreach and live release coordinator, a shelter manager, and, you know, a director of animal care. So we got a lot of warm bodies running around. And that's not including all the temps we have or the volunteers.
Would you be willing, if any of our listeners are trying to increase their staff levels, to assist in providing whatever, you know, whatever emails you may have sent, or just coming up with some guidelines on why this is necessary? You know, it sounds like you've really done a lot of work behind the scenes to get this approval and get, you know, get the officers that are needed to make our community safe.
Absolutely. And just as a couple of keynotes, a lot of that is simply being able to crunch the numbers to make the bean counters happy, being able to justify man hours that you need for operations, you know, using the NACA formula for, you know, 4 times more contact with the public for animal control officers, and some of the formulas for how long it actually takes to do our job, you know, cleaning and taking care of 200 animals a day. It can be broken down to minutes and hours and man hours, and simply showing that, you know, I'm sorry, 5 people can't clean a shelter with 200 animals in 8 hours. Just doesn't happen, no matter how you add it up.
Not appropriately, at least.
it not appropriately by anybody's standards. Right. And, you know, it simply disinfecting each kennel and allowing the disinfectant to sit for the 10 minutes required to actually disinfect a surface, you know, it's you've got to basically be able to show the math. You know, like my old geometry teacher used to make us do our homework on unlined paper and pen. You had to show how you got from the beginning to the end of your proof. And if you didn't show all the steps, you failed. And that's really how you have to deal with a lot of the folks in the Office of Budget and Projects. You've got to show them the math. So I've said that, you know, for many, many years. It's all about making the bean counters happy.
So, Mark, I'm not sure if I missed this during your introduction. You talked about, you know, it was part of the health department. What currently is the program run under? Is it through your law enforcement? Is it just through your shelter? Like, who's governing it?
We are bifurcated. The day I started, they chose to split and place the animal control operation under the general services division of the city and the animal shelter side of the division under the health department. So we manage adoptions, intake, animal care, and the licensing program. And the animal services side is underneath an associate director for the field services and the bite investigation. You know, we had a joint budget. Now with this year's fiscal year, we actually have a split budget, but, you know, they've committed the resources on both sides to making sure that there's adequate funding and adequate staffing. You know, Detroit came out of bankruptcy, and for the longest time, you know, they had a nonprofit that was fundraising just to put dog food in the shelter. So the city's actually able to fund those things now, and it's really been a kind of a transitional year. We're looking at moving or renovating the existing building, which was donated to the city by Michigan Humane. It was originally built back in the late 1890s. So it's it exceeded its operational lifespan sometime around 1920. So now we're at 2021. We really need to get the move on to get our move on.
Mark, we talked about some of the stuff that you deal with in Detroit, and offline we discussed rabies a little bit. So are you seeing that in your domestic pet population?
Well, it's funny you should ask. You know, the state of Michigan had been terrestrial rabies free. We hadn't had any dogs or cats test positive since 2011, and last week we changed that. We had a couple that found a stray and took it in back in February, and that's how a lot of people get their dogs in Detroit. They find them or get them in the field. But the folks had it. And a couple of weeks ago, the dog got into it with an unknown animal outside in their backyard. They didn't find the other animal, but their dog had some cuts and scratches. About 2 weeks later, it started getting really ill, couldn't stand. And they called Michigan Humane because they have a veterinary outreach program. Michigan Humane sent out one of their drivers, and because of the symptoms described, they were extremely cautious, no contact, not just because of the current pandemic, but we're really worried about your animal. Brought it in, and vet staff took a look at it, and there was nothing they could do. The animal ended up being humanely euthanized, and the specimen sent to our state lab in Lansing for testing. And back on the 17th, we got a notification that Michigan had the first positive dog in the city of Detroit in the last decade. So we had to kind of switch to crisis mode and crisis communications, getting the word out to, first of all, the folks who were involved with the animal. Thankfully, you know, none of the secondary handlers had any direct contact, but the two people that found it recommended they contact their regular physician and consider post-exposure. But more importantly, we have a very low compliance rate for licensing and rabies vaccinations.
What? So that's a thing?
That's
let me get me started.
What? People don't license their pets?
Well, I'm sorry. When I came from in Montgomery County, we had a compliance rate of over 58% for licensing and vaccinations.
Well, you're the anomaly. That's amazing.
Well, Ohio ties it to funding their dog warden operation, so there's a vested interest in the actual operation. It's, if you want to eat, you have to get pets licensed, period. Most other states, and like Detroit, that money just goes into a general fund, so it's never really been incentivized for the department to excel. And I've kind of started out, you know, pushing that issue. We're looking at a number of options, but first and foremost, my job is to get the animals in the city vaccinated. And now with this actual companion animal positive case, you know, the health department is really going to be shifting some of their, you know, public health initiative to focusing on that. We've sent out canvassers to go door to door within a mile radius, passing out information. We're going to be extending free rabies shots to citizens in the area and the city. We're going to be hosting a free rabies vaccine clinic. And the goal is to protect people and pets. You know, we can't do that sitting behind a desk in an office. We have to get out to the public. And, you know, COVID's made that difficult for a lot of agencies. But we basically stayed open the whole time. We converted to the 1920s speakeasy, had people come to the back door, ring the bell, and we got him into a nice used pet, low mileage, only one owner. We took out factory installed equipment, gave it that new dog smell, and we raised our live release rate to over 90% consistently, courtesy of the COVID-19 pandemic. So it's actually been a boon for our department.
That's awesome.
I got two things for you. So first one, I just want to confirm, I'm guessing here, but so my understanding is then that these people did not actually get the dog vaccinated once they brought it into their home and weren't necessarily responsible, correct?
Like the dog was never vaccinated, never saw a veterinarian once they brought it in.
Okay. And just as a side note, for your rabies clinics, I have worked, because I've done quite a few, we give free rabies vaccines. It would be probably worthwhile to reach out to some of your microchip companies and see if you can work with any of them. We're able to get microchips at a very discounted rate. We charge $10 to the people. It's a lifetime registration, and that has helped me immensely, you know, getting animals microchip too, so that we can more easily get them home. We do the microchip and rabies all in one.
We'll be giving giving away the farm.
Yeah,
we've got the microchips in where we routinely discount stuff. We use the Bridge card, which is our version of a benefits card through the state. Pretty much we look for every reason we can give it to you for free and justify it. So we buy it and we give it away, because on the plus side, my goal is to keep animals from coming into the shelter. You know, we're trying to deal with, you know, pandemic conditions, reduce capacity. So if we can figure out a way that your animal goes home in the field, great. And we're looking at potentially partnering with a new license provider so that we can get tags that have the QR code, so folks can simply scan them with their phone in the field.
Yep.
And hey, you know, I picked up your dog. This is Joe Smith. I'm at 122 Anywhere Street. How about you come get Fluffy? He'd like to go home. And, you know, cut out the middleman, because animal services, oftentimes, you know, especially when we're dealing with enforcement, we end up punishing poverty. And that doesn't solve the root cause, which is folks are, yeah, they're trying to pay the bills. And, you know, if you're not using it as a revenue generator to fund the operation, then your licenses are primarily pet reunification tools. And I need to make those as accessible as possible, period. End of discussion. I want your dog to go home. I'd prefer it never come into my shelter.
Can we talk quickly what your rabies compendium looks like in Detroit? And same with you, Ashley, in Wisconsin. So for us, if an animal has had any vaccination of any kind for rabies at any point in life, it's a 45-day at-home quarantine if that animal has had any contact with a rabies vector species. Saying that, there has to be some booster shots given at like day one, day 21, and I think day 40 or day 30, something like that. If there is no history of rabies shot, if there's no history of the rabies shot, then it's suggested by our Department of Public Health to, or the state's Department of Public Health, to euthanize the animal. If that individual doesn't want to euthanize and have it tested, they can do a 120-day quarantine, but that has to be done either at our shelter or, you know, the jurisdiction shelter, or a licensed veterinarian that is, you know, licensed for boarding as well. So how does that look for you, Ashley?
So ours is a 60-day if it's been vaccinated, or 160 days if it's not been vaccinated. But if I'm going to be real honest here, if it's animal versus animal, there's not much enforcement. Like, we have the law out there, but we have no way of tracking it at this point. So our main concern is the animal versus human side of it. And we're very strict on it in my area.
Okay. And how about you, Mark?
A dog versus wildlife unvaccinated is 6 months double gate quarantine, no human contact or sacrifice and euthanize.
Okay.
If it is vaccinated, it's 45 days boosted. Again, home quarantine's allowed. Human exposure, it's 14-day quarantine. Can be vet, home, or shelter, depending on, you know, the ability of the owner to properly maintain it. But we do have, up until, like I said, last week, it was not such a big deal. You know, we tested maybe 3 bats, you know, in and around the city of Detroit in the longest time, and only 7 in the area. But now that we have it on the ground, we're still waiting for the strain type to come back to see whether it's skunk, bat, or raccoon.
What variant, yeah.
That's going to be a big deal.
Can I just float this out there, and I'd like both of your opinions on this. If let's say I'm at a party at somebody's house and their dog, you know, gives me a warning bite. It's not an aggressive, you know, attack. It's a warning bite because I'm an idiot and didn't listen to the behavioral cues of that animal. And that animal, we can prove that that animal is currently vaccinated and has either had a history of vaccinations or it's up to date on its shots. Why are we still quarantining those animals? Like, I know the practice has been in place for decades and centuries, but like, someone help me with that.
No vaccine is 100% effective. That is why.
Okay.
Rabies is a 100% fatal disease. There's, you know, 10 people worldwide that have lived after contracting rabies. Of those 10 people, if they have survived it, once they've started showing the symptoms, it's my understanding that the symptoms they never die. Go away. Yeah. Well, but they never go away. Like, if they survive it, like, whatever the last symptom is that they had, they will always have that.
That neurological, yeah.
Yeah, whatever it may be. It could be, you know, any one of 10 different symptoms. It baffles me, and I actually just looked it up, and I was wrong. It's not 160 days, it's 180 days. It baffles me, though, that with scientific information that we have this variance between, you know, you guys are 45 days, I'm 60 days. Hmm. Mark, you said that it's a 14-day confinement, whereas ours is 10, because the animal, if it has rabies and it bites due to having rabies active in its system, we know it will be dead within 10 days. I have a special rabies certification. So it surprises me that we would have this variance across the U.S.
Yeah, but honestly, think about the 27 different names we have to define our profession. There's no consistency. There's no consistency in what we do as a profession, as a, you know, as a needed resource.
This is just scientific evidence. I don't understand.
Yeah, we work for police departments, sheriffs, city management, the public works department, solid waste, the Parks, Recreation, and Tourism Bureau, the health department, the fire department, zoning enforcement, codes enforcement. I mean, you just run through the gamut. I had somebody couldn't believe that we work for Parks, Recreation, and Tourism in Newport News. And they said, why is that? And I said, when they started the division, they asked all the city departments who wanted it. And there was this rush for everybody to say, not it.
Yeah.
And the director of Parks, Recreation, and Tourism, who has the park rangers under him, said, you know, we'll take them. We'll lump them in with visitor protection, because everybody in Newport News, whether they're a resident, or a visitor they need protected, and they took it. And it really was great because Parks, Recreation, and Tourism, I got to tell you, they had the budget. We go to ask for an item, and I wanted to buy the El Cheapo digital cameras. The boss comes in, and he's bought everybody the top of the line, you know, these like $800 cameras for the animal control officers. And I'm like, boss, we really don't. He said, yes, you do. He said, because when I take my pictures for the annual park calendar, this is the quality of the picture I want, and this is the one you're going to have to use to get pictures that I can use. Okay, I'm not going to argue with you.
Right? Don't look at a good horse in the mouth.
Oh, yeah. Trucks, top of the line. Equipment, top of the line. And, you know, that's just how they operated. So, you know, it was
Mark,
great.
Before we wrap up, I want to ask you, you know, you've, I don't think you brought it up in your bio. I know you've been the former president of NACA, and along with that, you're well connected to this industry. This has been your life's work. You exude it in all avenues, whether it's people asking for help, people feeling down, you always offer guidance and support. If you were to able to wave a magic wand at our profession, at our industry, to give us one thing that we currently don't have, what would it be?
You know, we talked about it, and I think everybody's mentioned, if I could wave a magic wand, I guess the word would be recognition. People to recognize that we truly are an important part of public safety, an important part of public health, and an important part of people's lives. Animal control, animal protection, humane agencies traditionally are underfunded, underappreciated, underrecognized, and often misunderstood. And it's been my experience throughout my 33 years, I've had to educate more folks in the administration and in the elected capacity and just the general citizenry about what we actually do and the risks we take. You know, I've lost 3 fellow officers I know closely to suicide. I've lost my first official duty as the president of newly elected president for NACA was to travel to Texas to Belmede, where an officer was shot by a couple of meth addicts because they thought he had seen their anhydrous ammonia tank and basically ambushed him behind the shelter, shot him in the back, and left him for dead. And this profession is dangerous due to both people and pets, and we often lack the training, the equipment, and the support that, you know, we commonly expect every other agency to have. And, you know, you guys may not be aware, but when the Oklahoma City bombing took place, the first responding officer wasn't a firefighter, it wasn't a police officer, it was an Oklahoma City animal control officer. So we run towards danger. We run towards danger. We don't run away from it. We run towards the dangerous dog. We run towards the bad guys. And usually it's with nothing more than our diplomacy skills, a leash, and if we're lucky, maybe a bite stick or some pepper spray. I don't want to see another officer buried. I don't want to attend another official funeral. So, you know, like Daniel, I travel around and I do my best effort to teach people how to take care of themselves so they don't go home with any more holes in their body at the end of the day than they started out with. It's my mission.
Mark, do your field officers, are they vested? Do they have body armor?
Oh, yeah. Every jurisdiction I've been with, we've had it. I've made sure that we've had it. And when I arrived in Montgomery County, made sure they had them. We had them in Newport News. We had them in Norfolk. We have them in Detroit. I mean, seriously, yeah. Detroit, we have more shootings, it seems like, every day than I care to even think about. And, you know, bad guys don't read the small print. You know,
no.
They don't look at the teeny badge. So, you know, it says in big letters all over it, animal control, animal services. But, you know, vests are a defensive item. It's no one's been shot with a bulletproof vest.
And let's be real. Right? Even if you changed your uniform to look more like a park ranger or even put us in civilian clothes, the nature of work that we do, we're still going to be in those risky situations. So changing our command presence to be more relaxed and take away the badge insignia and just put like the city logo on your shirt does nothing but tell tell me that you know the job is inherently risky. And I really think that that needs to be addressed. The job, again, no matter what I go, what kind of clothing I go to your house, if I'm there to investigate a animal cruelty report and I have to seize an animal or, you know, something that it's going to cause issues with that person at the home, that ultimately you're putting yourself in a dangerous situation. So we should have vests and we should carry firearms and be trained on how to utilize those firearms just for those moments where if I do get shot in the chest, you know, I can defend myself at that point. Not saying that we need it because we're arresting people. We need it as a self-defense mechanism.
That's correct. I tell people, you know, when you need help, you know, and seconds count, help's only minutes away. You can't wait for folks while you call for backup. By then it's too late. And we could do a whole podcast on the inherent dangers and, you know, officers that have been ambushed, shot, injured. Just the list is too long to even to bear thinking about. So, you know, if again, if there was one thing we could get, it would be recognition, people to understand what we do and why it is we need to have the proper training, the proper personal protective gear, the proper self-protection equipment, and the certifications. You know, we're enforcing the law. This isn't just a great idea. You know, you don't knock on somebody's door and go, hey, you know, wouldn't it be great if you'd vaccinate your dog and, you know, it not go out and bite six people? Eventually, you got to issue a citation and it's got to go through the criminal process. And people just don't realize how important that is.
I'd like to take you up on that offer of coming back and we'll discuss some of the historic dangers of this job. And I think it's really important for people to understand, and maybe this podcast can get distributed to the right people then, and that, you know, for them to hear too on how dangerous this job really is. We really do appreciate, you know, all that you've done for this industry, Mark, and I'm looking forward to seeing you here in a couple months. And hopefully as the world continues to open up, there'll be more opportunities to get together there as well.
You betcha. Looking forward to it. And thanks for having me. You know, again, it's after last week following Carol Baskin, it's kind of a hard show, but
you know, if you missed that episode, go back and check it out. I thought it was an amazing episode. It really gave some insight.
Absolutely.
As well as this one.
Yeah, absolutely too. I mean, this is, you know, I'm a little biased because Mark's been a friend of mine for years. And so excited to talk to him and catch up in some of those aspects. But, you know, overall, we're here for you as the listener. We want to make sure that we're bringing content that you find interesting. Please check us out on our Facebook page, Humane Roundup, and or on Instagram. Check out H.O. Bishop on both social media platforms. I'm there as well. Animal Protection Officer Daniel. Please do not forget to like, share, and leave a review here on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Play. And just spread the word. We're out here, you know, trying to help you, you know, bring more notoriety to the profession, giving, you know, this is not just a podcast for you as an officer, but it can be for anybody that has just wants to know more about what we do as a profession. So thank you as one of the hosts here on the show, I want to thank you. And, you know, thank you, Ashley, for putting up with me and continuing to, you know, bring great
somebody's
questions.
Got to keep you in line.
That's for
it's a
sure.
Tough job.
And again, for everyone listening, we thank you. And as always on the Humane Roundup podcast, we like to say, keep it
humane.
Awesome.